You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. This week, it's part two of 1996, the greatest year in rock.
You high fiving, motherfucker. You high fiving, motherfucker. You high fiving, motherfucker. You high fiving, motherfucker. You just so I can build my bro.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. I'm your host, LC, and I am joined, as always, with the post-grunge Baco. How are you, sir?
I'm well, but you're officially now making the change from Loose Cannon to LC?
I just shortened it up, you know, just like okay. Terminator 2 is T2. And, right. You know, in general, like I heard on the Craig Smith episode that he called me a cannonball.
I liked it,
and,
yeah.
Which was almost as absurd as that. And I was like, you know what? It might be time to move on to initials. And or I was thinking about just changing myself to go by Run, like Cannonball Run. What say you?
Yeah, I like that too. But it has to be C-Run or something like that. C-Ball Run. How about C-Ball? Can we call you C-Ball? C-Ball.
I don't know. C-Ball. Yeah, we'll just see. I think that as we move forward and our fame grows, that I need a more professional title, LC and Baco.
when you're trying to line up an interview, it's like I'm Liz Cannon. Yeah,
I put L Cannon. I always put LC on those emails now. I'm like, maybe I just need to shift over there for respectability.
Yeah,
which I will not have. But anyway, 1996.
Yeah, back to 1996, baby, part two. The greatest year in rock.
Yeah, man. This was a pivotal year for myself as a youngish man. Do you want me to start, or do you want to talk about where you were this year?
I think I'm going to let you take the lead.
Okay. Well, 1996, I had just graduated from college and was starting to embark on adulthood. And, you know, this was, what I mean by that is after I graduated, I didn't have a fucking job. And I worked at Eddie Bauer.
Nice.
Folding clothes.
I've shopped at Eddie Bauer.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if you know much. My idea about Eddie Bauer is, you know, they always want you to buy the clothes that that they have to wear, and they give you a big discount. And I was like, you know, I'm good. Does anybody actually buy any of the clothes at Eddie Bauer? Do you own anything by Eddie Bauer? It's like,
not anymore. I've probably bought like a pair of gloves or something like that there before. But this train wreck of a girl I dated in the early 2000s was a fan. And one of her favorite hobbies was to dress me. And she bought me shit from Eddie Bauer, but
I don't know. I'm just amazed. It's one of those places that I'm shocked is still in business, because the stuff was never like, damn man, where'd you get that? Well, that's Eddie Bauer. Like, you know what I mean? There was nothing to that.
It was a popular place for guys in like southern Minnesota that like going to what they consider clubs in southern Minnesota, you know, to shop at. You know, they like the old Evergreen pump spray and all the. I'll say this: if you lived in Dodge Center, Minnesota, in 1990 something, and you had one of those belts that are like weaved, so you can just kind of poke it through, it hangs
that's
down.
Right. I remember those.
Yeah.
Okay. Woven belts.
Those guys loved Eddie Bauer.
Okay. Yeah, those belts were like, if you're a 36-inch waist, they were like a 44. You just kept wrapping them around yourself.
Yeah, it could fit so many different people because you just jam it in the fucking the weave.
You go to a line dance and turn it into a lasso.
Oh, man. Guarantee that's happened.
But, yeah, man. So in the entire time, I'm just folding with anger, you know, just like... And finally,
you should make a video when we're done with this of you, like you showing your clothes folding technique for the listeners.
Well, I've graduated now. Now I do it like that one broad on that one Asian broad on Netflix and just roll everything into a, you know, right. What's that lady's name?
I don't know who you're talking about. Of course, every time you have a TV reference, it's something that nobody watches.
Oh, God damn it. Hold on for a second.
You can't remember the name.
She was very quite famous.
Asian broad. Folding clothes.
No, that's the entire show is organizing it. She goes. No, seriously, this lady is. I can't remember her name right now, but she is. But she was quite.
She's the headmistress at a podcaster's efficiency apartment complex.
She purges. She goes to people's houses, has them purge everything, organize everything, and she has this way of folding that's supposed to give you like feng shui or some kind of. Oh, Mary Kondo. Mary Kondo. That's her name.
Got it.
You got it? Okay. So let's move forward. And so the next 10 years, though, 1996 is when I decided that I would like to, as my dream was as a young boy, to work for Enterprise Rent-A-Car for almost the next...
Oh, yeah. Me too.
Almost the next 10 years where I would tell you this
I got
this
stuck
decade,
at National.
What? You actually were in a car rental place?
Yeah, Avis.
Holy shit. You're
no,
kidding
I'm just
me?
Kidding. No.
Oh, okay. Well, this place, but by the way, just for those that don't know, Enterprise Rent-A-Car is basically is basically getting paid to go drink beer after hours several times a week and live at Buffalo Wild Wings. I mean, this was a stage of just insanity. Everybody's 25 years old.
Nice.
All the ladies, all the guys together.
We talking here? Indiana, Florida? Somewhere else?
Indiana. Well, no, not Indiana. Chicago is where I was.
The Big Apple.
Yeah. Yes, the Big Apple. America's Crossroads, I think it's called. In Chicago, yeah? But yeah, so this was the year that, you know, graduating, that didn't know what to do. This is why I remember this year. Getting my first apartment for $500 a month, all utilities included, in Griffith, Indiana, which is one block away from Gary, Indiana, to give you my economic level at that time. So
that's a cultural hotbed.
It is. It is. You know, there's nothing like being right next door to the murder capital of the United States.
See a diversity, right?
Mm-hmm. See a diversity. Me and Gary.
Gary, Indiana. You ever is named after the dumbest guy in every group. You ever notice that the dumbest guy in any group is named Gary?
I thought it was Steve.
No, Steve's cool.
So that was where I was making, you know, just starting to build up my debt, as any young man should with credit cards.
Right on. You didn't have any coming out of college?
No, of course, because, you know, I'm from a very, you know, prestige
Right. Loose Jr.
I was driving my first Mercedes, but it was a, you know, I was only a couple years old. So, okay. So I felt a little bad. Well, I'll just tell you one other thing. This is the, you know, because only Ask Jeeves was around to research apartment buildings. That's one of the reasons I ended up in Griffith right next to Gary, where I actually moved into a place where, do you remember those apartment guides you would get maybe? And you would have like these big, like beautiful pictures of, you know, ducks in a pond and beautiful what the amenities were. Do you remember your first apartment? Like how? Oh, you
of course I do.
It?
It was a tenement in Rochester. To call it an apartment was a bit much. Wilson and I's rent was $210 a month, I believe.
Split though.
I was paying like $105 till that was during college. And then my next apartment was at a regular complex, but it was in Rochester and we needed a place to move to. So I don't remember looking at a lot of brochures. Well, I've lived in one place for a long time. I may have forgotten that part of it.
Okay. Well, this was the thing, like it was 2 hours away, you know, I was moving and stuff like that. So you looked at it, it looked beautiful. Then you get there and it was completely like all the pool. I said like has three pools. All three pools were shut down and like condemned. And then it was all that trickery you can't do these days.
Did they shoot My Name Is Earl there?
Oh, it pretty much was, man.
There's the reference people get.
Well, oh, okay. Excellent. I only saw one episode, and that was with Mary Kondo when she was on the guest star.
All right,
So to give you an idea, after 2 weeks of living there, my neighbor, who was like a 70-year-old guy, all of a sudden there's police tape there, and he was killed. And I found out that the story was the fact he was killed by one of his hookers that came by. Like he paid some lady, and she robbed him and ended up killing him. So that's where I was living, and I was like, wow, I've made some excellent choices in life, and this will be where I go. And I even back then, I saw Uber in my future.
Do you mind if I tell a quick side story of the place I was telling you about? Now, this goes back to 1991-ish, but that place that Wilson and I were living at, there was I'm just going to say a man and his a girlfriend or wife living upstairs.
Sure.
He was quite the player, though. He was often out, and she was not. One evening, Wilson and I are just sitting around watching fucking MTV or something. We get a banging at the door, and it's her. And she needs us to take 8 TVs and hold on to them for her because Larry, I think his name was, got arrested that night. So,
and 8 I'm like, TVs?
And Wilson's like, we got to do this. I'm like, dude, we're not fucking putting, these things are fucking stolen. So obviously, we opened up the laundry room and let her hide them down there because there's a laundry room in the basement that was shared. I'm like, at least we can fucking have some plausible deniability, but.
Well, plus back then, each TV was like 70 pounds.
yeah, well, they weighed it. Yeah, it was a lot of work, too, but that part I wasn't able to get out of. But anyway, the cops did come. I don't remember what all happened with old Larry. They weren't living there too much longer, and the TVs were still in the basement when they left, so I got a free TV out of the deal. Cobra hack.
Cobra hack.
Anyway. So what else? You get your apartment set up, and then you start slaying the squish?
Shortly after, I had a girl move in with my girlfriend at the time move in with me, and she brought a ferret with her. That was her pet. And I'll just leave it at that. This is a saga in and of itself.
Sounds like a future episode, but...
not a gerbil, if you're going there, but a ferret.
I wasn't, but now I am. Thank you.
Okay, so that apartment was rather musky. But enough about my my bad decision making. What about you? 1996.
It seems in many ways the years we end up picking for this end up being somewhat symbiotic for us, despite, as you like to announce all the time, our giant age gap. It was a huge year of change for me too. Dropped out of college. I lived in Rochester for about another year. Then I started dealing with a lot of I don't know, personal issues that were just. It was clear that I needed to kind of to reset Baco, basically. So I moved back home to live with my dad for a while. The plan was to stay there not too long. It ended up being about a year and a half. But by 1996, I decided this is it. I'm going to just find a job in the Twin Cities, find a place to live, and I'm going to pursue music for the next decade at least. I'm going to push hard to at least establish something and see where I can take it from there.
Ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question real quick? I got to tell you, I forgot to mention that too. Isn't that the hardest thing? Like in 96, after not living at home, I ended up living at home for about 6 months before I got the job. That is an odd thing to go back, right?
It is, yeah. And then my dad started dating this woman, and she and her and I didn't get along. And when you're an adult, it's a lot different than when you're a child dealing with a stepmother that doesn't like you. You know what I mean?
Sure.
A lot more of the onus is clearly on me, you know, and so whatever. It just made it kind of uncomfortable is all. She was a far more better person than my stepmother. But yeah, so I make the move. I actually got the job that I fucking still have.
Really? That's the year? Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So I had, I basically had 5 offers. It was a much different employment time. And back then, kids, you had to drive to the employer,
yes,
grab an application, fill it out, and then call them back. I had my choice of a few different places. I feel pretty well that I made the right choice because it's allowed me to do a lot of different things and, you know, also pay my bills. So, but yeah, that was a really big deal for me. And, you know, obviously my dreams of rock stardom never really panned out, but a lot of things did work out for me. And, you know, I'm about 95% happy with everything in my life right now. And the 5% is all related to money, which I think almost everybody deals with. So, and also in 96, I had, a very pivotal relationship with this girl named Shelly. And have you ever dated somebody for about 3 months that are great, and then it just becomes very obvious that you're really two different people? Or just not compatible, I should say, after kind of cruising, like, hey, this is going really good.
That pretty much defines most relationships.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I hung on for another 3 months other than the fact that it sets up everything else in your life. So if you're happy with something after that, you can't really cherry pick these 3 months. But yeah, it was kind of nasty there at the beginning of 97. But other than that, period, I was an emotional wreck. But for the most part, yeah, she took my heart out and stepped on it and fucking took a deuce on it and all that shit. But at least I had music the whole time. But that was basically the nuts of it in shell for me. I was also, when I was single, I was going to clubs with my roommates. The Mall of America had a level that was all nightclubs at that time. You just go there and get
really
fucking hammered and fucking drive home. I was going to work on 4 hours sleep, 3 nights a week at least. You know, it was great.
That's the most amazing thing back in the day, though, is when you're younger, where like the Enterprise days, we could be out until like bars closed at 3 in the morning. Like in Chicago, unlike other places. And you could be there at 7:30 in the morning and be fine and then do it again the next day.
I don't know that I would ever say I was fine, but yeah, you can power through it. Now you're just like, I'm not even going to fucking go there.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
old man.
I mean, yeah, if you think fucking dry heaving into a paper recycling bin is fine, yeah, I guess I was fine.
Oh, my God. But the greatest thing is that through all these trials and tribulations, that the power of rock and roll that led us down this path to completely revolutionize this podcast industry the way we have, to push things next level, to make other shows sound like ours. This is the goal that we have achieved. On our gravestones, it will say, Podcast Revolutionaries.
Yes.
Name a band that you listened to this year.
Oh, is it my pick? Am I going first?
Yeah, man.
Well, why don't we open up with Metallica? They were kind of in a transition phase in 96. The album Load came out, and they had short hair, man.
I know. They went to supercuts.
This album is not definitely... It definitely isn't one of my favorite Metallica records, but I do think it's a good album. Have we talked about this record much?
I think we've touched on it maybe only in reference to doing Hardwired.
Okay.
As far as like the ranking and things like that, like go ahead. I have some things.
Yeah,
to say,
I thought we did have something on that, but yeah, you know, Bob Rock's back, and after the big success of the Black Album, it was a bit of a wait for this.
Five
the
years.
Opening single, Until It Sleeps, kind of fell flat for me, but I went out and bought the record, and the opening track for me is a keeper, and it's Ain't My Bitch.
Yeah, for whatever reason, in at least in my area, I don't think it was officially a single, but they actually leaked or put out "Ain't My Bitch." Maybe it wasn't an official single first before "Until It Sleeps" for us. So that was actually my first taste of the album.
That would have helped if I heard that first, but I was going to buy it regardless.
Yeah, but I remember getting it and being like pretty confused about it because because "Ain't My Bitch" is the one that I heard first, and then the oddness. How odd was that Artie video for "Until It Sleeps"?
It was no odder than the bull semen on the screen. Seeing Hammett and Lars make out just kind of, I don't know, probably pushed a few more Metallica fans deeper into the closet.
There's only like one or two songs that even had some thrashiness to it. So
it sort of followed the line of the Black Album, you know, as far as the type of songs. So
yeah, but I think that there is it's half of an actual good album. If you can step back a little bit and say and you're not expecting Ride the Lightning, I think there's some pretty cool just straight up rock songs on it.
Yeah,
but there's some definitely filler. Now Reload is a turd. I've never. How Fuel is in their set list or even played or this?
It's just got to be a favorite of James is where I'm going.
Got to be, man, because
it sucks.
Yeah, but it was pretty. Did you see them on this tour at all? Though?
No.
Easily their best tour that they ever did with the whole multiple stages and the fake guy falling and catching on fire. Do you know what I'm talking about? Or not. Yeah, that I thought was badass. Everything since then has not been as good.
Okay, well, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm gonna talk about The Weezer.
The Weezer.
Yeah. And
that's for you, Aaron Camaro.
That's right. But, yeah, so they follow up their huge success of the Blue Album 2 years later with Pinkerton. And this was a big bomb. The first single, El Scorcho, didn't do anything.
This is the record that every diehard Weezer fan says, you don't understand Pinkerton.
what I understand is that they shouldn't have led with El Scorcho, because it's probably the worst song on the album in my opinion. But there are some great tracks on this. Tired of Sex is a great title.
I haven't listened to it in over a decade, so I'll be interested to hear the track you pick. Maybe I'll go back to it, but this album bored the fuck out of me.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it, and it was just odd that after this is where it got this whole critical acclaim, where it just like just
that's kind of where I was going. It's like it's like Pitchfork suddenly is like the tastemaker of the year. Like, oh, you guys don't understand. Weezer really knocked it out of the park with this. I don't know.
No, I get it, but it's almost like the you know, Beastie Boys following up with Paul's Boutique, where that one is revered, like a masterpiece, where it just was a complete failure too. But anyway,
how come people don't feel that way like about music from the Elder or like some of those lost era Sabbath records? You know, it's like it seems harder to get that kind of opinion out of, you know, because that's kind of where what I was thinking about. That is like, if I was a bigger Weezer fan, I would have definitely gone back to it a bunch of times, even if I didn't like it, because I still do that with like Black Sabbath, Forbidden, and Cross Purposes. Those records don't do much for me, but every now and then I'm like, maybe I need to give it another chance, you know. Riot.
Right.
Every time, like once a year, some friend of mine will post something about that band Riot with that stupid seal man dolphin, and I'll go back and check it out, and I'm like, this is just as boring as I remember it.
I know. And then you feel even worse because you're looking at the guy with a seal wearing a leotard or whatever it is.
Ready for war, seal head man.
Oh my god.
Anyway.
But
the Weezer.
So going back to the Weezer, we have, I don't understand even what the big deal was, because to me it was very similar to the Blue Album too. So in style and everything like that. But whatever. But the main thing is that if they had led with this specific track instead, I think it would have been completely different. And that is one that would have perfectly fit on the Blue Album, like I think most of this does. And that is the Makes Me Happy Every Time I Hear It, The Good Life.
In the cold, bitter and alone. ritual. I ain't gonna hurt nobody, ain't gonna cause a scene. Just need to admit that I want sugar in my tea. Hear me, hear me. I want sugar in my tea. And I don't wanna be an old man anymore. It's been a year or two since I was out on the floor. Chicken booty making sweet love all the night. This time I got back to the good life.
So a couple fun facts about the Weezer. Rivers Cuomo had such a like, because of this album was such a bomb, he actually went back, I think he went to Harvard. You know, he went to college. The whole band broke up.
Harvard or MIT, I believe it was Harvard, though.
It's something very unique and everything, I guess, for a rock star and everything. He went that completely, got his degree, and it wasn't until, I think, 2001 that they came out with the Green Album with a hash pipe and a couple other hits on it too. But it completely disbanded after that. But sometimes if you break up, you go to college, come back.
All the Weezer.
Yeah. And they've never had, but see, it's those first two albums. The rest of their discography is one or two songs on albums that I like, but most of it's just garbage, I think.
Okay.
Your opinion?
Yeah. I don't know. The two greatest hits is fine. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So you're up, man.
Well, one thing about 96 that was happening a lot that I think kind of sets up where I'm going with my next pick is that 96 was a big year for bands reuniting. I know, of course, Kiss got back together. It was announced, I think, at either the Grammys or the American Music Awards. They walked out on stage with Tupac, and then we're all supposed to just assume that means they're back together. That was weird as shit, but I still thought it was cool.
I love that picture. You keep seeing that picture.
Yeah, it is kind of nuts. And then the Sex Pistols, of course, reunited. But you know, kind of where you were talking a little bit off mic, that you were kind of pointing out that, you know, the obvious thing is that the reunion for Kiss was sort of set up from the MTV Unplugged, right?
See, I'm going to just touch on the Unplugged thing before we go into reunion, and that is that, I mean, when I saw that on MTV, I thought that was awesome. I mean, it was only an hour, and I knew there was more. And so when the actual album came out, I was thrilled to finally hear the entire, you know, the entire show. And to me, I think Unplugged is just a great moment. Like, if I'm going to, you know, you could put that on a playlist for people who don't even like Kiss, and you can just see the selection of songs. I thought that was really cool. And
it kind of validated that their music is not as dumb and bad as it's, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's dumb and bad at times, but there is some depth to some of their stuff, you know what I mean? And with Bruce Kulick and Singer in the band, you got to see that the musicianship of Gene and Paul wasn't that bad either, you know?
Yeah, that their singing was top-notch. I think they really, really pushed it on that. I just think it's a great moment in Kiss-tory. And I will say one other thing about it. And that is that I do say that the selection of plaster caster on acoustic was not
awesome.
A great choice, though. It is so funny to hear that acoustic talking about his dick getting encased it's just a ridiculous song to pick for that. But other than that, it was a good song selection.
I was happy with that being in there, so fuck you.
What? Oh, I love that song. It's just funny to hear him sitting on a you know, just looking at the visual of them playing acoustic guitars talking about their dicks. Come on. Yeah. The rest of them were dick songs, is my point.
There's dick songs. There's a dick in every Kiss song.
You just sometimes
in some
you don't
way,
even see
every
it.
Kiss song is about Paul's or Gene's dick.
Every once in a while, you just get a dick in the air.
Even Beth is about Paul's dick.
Okay, I didn't.
Sorry,
all right.
Kate. Anyway, I should mention real quick: The Monkees, New Edition, and Poison and Supertramp all reunited that year too. I only mentioned two bands. I should probably flesh that out a little bit. But so back to the Unplugged thing, though. Alice in Chains had their own Unplugged, and this was one of the last performances with Layne Staley. So even though it wasn't technically a new release, I wanted to play something off that. Is that cool?
Do it.
I thought they knocked it out of the park. Hearing Down in a Hole Unplugged was amazing. So here it is, Alice in Chains with Down in the Hole.
Bury me
So yeah, so doing research on this, I was not aware of this, but so I saw Kiss on the reunion tour, and I think it was like their fourth date. It was at least within the first handful of dates they did, and it was in Louisville on the reunion tour, and I was supposed to get STP, and, you know, Weiland had some issues, so then they brought in another person severely on drugs, Lane, and Alice in Chains, and I didn't know this at the time, but this was the second-to-last performance ever of Alice in Chains with Lane. It was the following concert that was in St. Louis.
So. Think about that. I mean, I know it's second-to-last, but... out of the big grunge guys, you saw the second to last performance of Alice in Chains with Lane. I saw the second to last Soundgarden show.
I know. I was
We're second to
that.
Lasters, baby.
It's crazy.
We can now identify as that. You know what I mean? It's like, do you identify as a man or a woman or a trans? We identify as second to lasters. It's a new thing, people. It's for real.
Two L? Is that? I'm trying to think of the acronym. You got to have an acronym, like that or whatever.
2TL.
Okay, 2TL. I like it. But, man, for
2TLers unite.
I got to tell you, I had seen Alice in Chains a couple years earlier at Lollapalooza, and they're phenomenal. When I saw them at the Kiss, Open for Kiss, you could tell there was something going on. I mean, it was sloppy as fuck, so.
Well, wow. It could have been worse. You could have got Sponge.
That is true. That or Jesus. I mean, that rotation of openers on that. You know what?
I was rooting for Melvins. I think I got them too.
Did you? At least they rotate. They did some nice rotation of openers for that versus just, you know, a painter or something. They gave bands chances when they came to their area.
Sure. You know,
I think it was kind of regional and stuff. Whatever. But I guarantee they didn't pay any of them. Really?
A regional, like so Seattle and Indiana are in the same region in your mind.
No, but later on that tour, you just saw random bands open for them. I'm saying,
yeah, I wonder how much they got paid. I think the when they started doing like the Psycho Circus and the Farewell, those like when it was basically Ted Nugent and Skid Row the entire time, we know they didn't get a lot of money.
No, and then the other ones, I think we're just happy to open for them for free. Is what I mean.
Sure,
that's
yeah.
Really just random. But they didn't definitely in the reunion tour. They didn't need an opener to sell tickets. Is my point.
No, exactly.
So
not like now, David LaRoth.
So what,
check your Groupon inbox, people. Kiss is coming.
I'll also stand by my statement that was not that impressed with the reunion tour. Said it before. Say it again. Sloppy. That's all I got.
Okay. Good for you.
I still say Revenge. Best lineup ever.
Well, I mean, and every show on the Revenge Tour was just fucking sold out. It was such a great crowd vibe at every show, right?
I don't care about that. I'm just talking.
If you're telling me the musicianship was better on the Revenge lineup, of course it was.
Okay,
but there was a look. You also saw the
better stage show. Better stage show. More energy.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Alive 2 stage is one of the best stages of all time.
And that wasn't Alive 2. It was a fucking. It was nothing like Alive 2. The reunion tour.
They tried to replicate it a little bit.
Yeah, and by replicate, they didn't do it.
Whatever.
They put amps
it
on stage,
was better.
Two
was
Kiss
better.
Logos. Not, a fucking shitty ass screen in the middle. You call that a show?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. Next time you want to have this hardline stance that goes against the grain, maybe don't see one of the first half a dozen shows of a band that features Peter Criss and Ace Frehley, two of the least rehearsed musicians on the planet. They might need a week or two to get things tight.
Listen, I saw that Second Coming DVD. They played Deuce at least 70,000 times getting ready for that tour.
Well, now that you've basically exposed yourself as a fraud, as a Kiss fan, why don't you tell us what you got next for... What's your next pick for 1996, the greatest year in rock?
Well, sure. And that is a band that I know no other songs by, and I think is perfect, is that I should transition to Buttholes. That is Butthole Surfers with Pepper.
Marky got with Sharon, and Sharon got Sharia. She was sharing Sharon's outlook on the topic of disease. Mikey had a facial scar, and Bobby was a racist. They were all in love with dying. They were doing it in Texas. Tommy played piano like a kid out in the rain, and then he lost his leg in Dallas. He was dancing with the train. They were all in love with dying. They were drinking from a fountain that was pouring like an avalanche coming down the mountain.
I don't mind the sun sometimes, the images it shows. I can taste you on my lips and smell you.
fucking life. You never know just how to look through other people's eyes.
Hot pursuit and fiery auto crashes. Some will die in hot pursuit while sifting through my ashes. Some will fall in love with life and drink it from a fountain that is pouring like an avalanche coming down the mountain.
I don't mind the sun sometimes, the images it shows. I can taste you on my lips and smell you in my clothes. Cinnamon and sugary and softly spoken lies. You never
Yeah, so there's a band I know nothing about. You know anything about them except the fact that it's amazing the name of their band?
I remember I heard about them forever, and they just seemed to kind of, there was one of those old-time bands that were kind of like that punk alternative thing that was kind of like, you know, all on indie labels that seemed to benefit from grunge exploding. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I mentioned the Melvins a little bit ago. King Buzzo was interviewed, and like when their first major label record came out, the record company came back and was like, yeah, you sold 30,000 records this week. And they're like, 30,000 records? They're like, right. They're blown away. And the record company's like, no, that's fucking horrible. This is a disaster. Right. And they're like, fuck that. We're thrilled. 30,000 people bought our fucking record. Yeah. That's more than all of our records combined. But yeah, they were kind of like that, except for they had kind of a nice little hit off that this record with Pepper.
Oh yeah, and then that, but I remember seeing pictures of the band, and like the lead singer had this big beer gut, and I think he would, his pants were, he had the plumber crack a lot. I think that's maybe why they got their name. What say you?
Could be, yeah. I don't know. I don't know the backstory in the Butthole Surfers. I don't go deep on the Butthole Surfers.
I can just tell you this: Butthole Surfers, perfectly rated. All right, man. Tell me another band that you were listening to in 1996, Baco.
Well, my next pick isn't necessarily a band that I listened to. I liked one song by them. And I don't know if you ever heard a band that, like, when you hear one song that you really like, but you can tell just by listening to it that you're not going to like anything else they do. Sure. This band, like, the Goo Goo Dolls pretty much are another band like that. I only like one song, and I knew when I heard it that this is not indicative of who they are. And you could probably almost interchange these two bands, but...
Yeah, no, I hear you. Like for me, it's the No Diggity by Block Street.
Oh, yeah. yeah, you know what? I bought that CD for $1. I figured I could buy one song for $1. It was used, but
yeah.
No Diggity. No, yeah, same here. That's a perfect example.
Came out in 1996. That's why I mentioned it.
Oh, yeah. No Diggity. Well, anyway, with that, my pick is the band Tonic and the song Open Up Your Eyes.
We'll be right back.
I think the name of the record was something really rocking and cool, like the Lemon Parade or something like that. So, but anyway, the girl that I talked about that destroyed my heart and shit all over it, sure. She bought me the CD for Christmas. So that's what I own it for that reason.
Nice. Yeah, Telex is one of those bands that kind of like Eve 6 and a couple of those that kind of just lumped
in
together. Yeah,
there was that. There wasn't that kind of wave like Toad the Wet Sprocket and all this kind of like light alt rock kind of, I don't know. Like I said, I think I called it male Lilith Fair. Easy for me to say.
We should say that this was also the year of maybe it started before, but 7 Mary 3 had an album, Matchbox 20. It was the beginning of the numbers.
But this was not the year 7 Mary 3's big record came out, was it?
Yeah, Cumbersome came out this year.
Okay. Well, I like that record.
Is that 7 Mary 3 or is that a different one?
That's 7 Mary 3, yeah.
Yeah, that's the whole thing is I even get them all confused because of the numbers. But
I was surprised. Remember when I interviewed the producer for that Iced Earth episode? He actually produced 7 Mary 3, and I was surprised to find out they had other records.
they came here with fucking Collective Soul, and it was packed. I think I talked about that.
Collective Soul. Yes. Grunge light.
Oh, my God, yes.
It's like religious. Dad grunge.
Yes.
Did I ever tell you what? My son-in-law called Slayer Dad Rock?
Slayer is now Dad Rock? Wow.
It's like, what the fuck? At the time, he was still living with his parents. I'm like, what the fuck do you listen to? Live at home with your parents, Rock?
I just think it's a funny image. Like, Dad Rock is something you see a guy with, like a polo shirt and khakis listen to Angel of Death.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Well, of course, you know, I think the image of me taking a defensive is even funnier. It's like, who the fuck you calling?
That's right. So you want to hear some facts?
Hit me.
Here's some technology facts. DVDs came out in Japan. They weren't here yet, but they had started.
When did you get your first DVD player? What year about?
Man, I'm going to say 99 or 2000 was right.
Yeah, same here. And I remember I bought it for like $120. It was a piece of shit, and it was a super cheap DVD player at the time.
I remember my first DVD player was almost like the beginning Blu-rays. You'd put it in there, you'd hit play, and sweet suffering fuck, it would take like a minute to warm up.
Yeah.
You're like, okay. And then the most annoying thing that I couldn't get past for DVDs was the fact that those menus you couldn't skip, that they forced you to watch the previews, were at least on a damn VCR you could hit fast forward, right, man?
Yeah, a little known fact, though, that was largely only on rental DVDs at the time.
Correct. Yes, that is true. That is true.
As you know, I'm a purchaser, not a renter.
Yes.
I'm an owner, and not a renter.
1996, global warming showed a record high. It's a good thing we solved that, though.
Yeah.
let me see. What else here?
Now we call it climate change because Americans are stupid.
Let me
see. Call it global warming. It has the word warm in it. And then someday it's not warm. Proof. Science.
let me see here.
I don't feel global warming is a real thing.
No, please. I watched two YouTube videos about it.
The earth is flat, damn it. Doesn't make any sense.
You want me to go into some movies?
Yeah. Hey, let's hit the final top 10.
Yeah.
Maybe we can find. You know what? Not a lot of hot spank action in the movie theaters in 96 so far. Let's see if we can step that up.
You mind if I go into top TV shows first? Do the top 10?
Why not? Yeah, let's hear it.
All right.
I watched almost no TV during this time.
Okay, well, here we go. You've got what I always think is funny is I never really consider it an actual show, but anytime it shows up, I'm like, okay, I guess so. 60 Minutes, number 10.
Okay.
Touched by an Angel.
There's some connotations there that don't sit well with me. Anyway.
Yeah. Was that Michael Landon?
No, that was Highway to Heaven.
Oh, it's Highway to Heaven. All right, right. What was Touched by an Angel?
I think Michael Landon might have been dead by 96. Touched by an Angel, I never saw it. I just, wasn't it like on like this, whatever the CW
CBS.
Is now?
Nope, CBS.
CBS, okay.
Yeah.
I think there was a large black woman in it or something like that.
All right. It's Oprah?
Oh, hey, got me horny again.
There is no need for self-love.
Home Improvement.
Okay. Well, the mom was kind of a hottie.
Oh, yeah.
Single Guy? What the hell is a single guy?
Oh, hey, that was fucking, what's that guy? David Silverman.
Oh, yeah.
Never watched it.
Yeah, I saw a couple episodes of that.
This one, I'll be surprised if you know it, because I don't. Fired Up?
Nope.
Number 6, The Naked Truth?
Nope. I told you I didn't watch shit for TV back then.
All right. Well, anyway, but Friends?
And I'm on the record as saying I think Lisa Kudrow is the hottest of the three, so.
I'll go with that, too, yeah.
Okay.
She's perfectly rated.
Exactly.
Suddenly Susan.
Yeah, that was, what's her name? The model, like, second show.
Yep.
Like,
Brooke Shields,
yeah. And the guy who played the rebel in Breakfast Club, he was her boss.
Judd Nelson was
Judd Nelson, yeah.
So I think this was right after Seinfeld or Friends, and somehow that's how it had its success, because it was wedged in there, because, God, I don't think I watched a single episode of that. I know it existed. Number 2 is Seinfeld.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Oh, you like Dreyfus?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, she's held up pretty good, the little president action.
Yeah, she really has, you know, and she's a funny woman, too.
ER, never liked it. I don't like any hospital shows.
House, I thought was good.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know. It seems like the only things that they can do for TV dramas are cops or hospitals, but occasional lawyer at law firm, but... So ER was number 1. Remember, like, I actually got the George Clooney haircut for a while.
Wow.
I think it was called the Caesar.
Okay.
Yeah,
nice.
I rocked that. It was probably around this time. Probably the last time I actually had a stylist that I would go to, you know, on a schedule.
You'd go there and then you'd put on your little vest and go clubbing?
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. Yeah. I'm surprised you remember that. Yeah, I would. That was an occasional thing, but yeah, that was during the same time.
I like it. I just liked you to have your own theme music, and it'd be Operation Mindcrime, just a little player in your pocket.
Mindcrime.
How about we do another song, then we do the movies? What say
all right,
you?
It's your pick, I believe.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with a band that just uses 3 strings on the guitar and 2 strings on the bass, and it is the Presidents of the United States of America with their album off their album 2. With the track Mach 5. Story about the Presidents of the United States of America, and that is that we, as you know, I was in a fraternity in college, Paco, is your want to make fun of me, yes?
Yeah. Well, it's all out of envy and jealousy, though.
And we had this thing that was basically, I can't remember what it was, but it was a lip sync contest for all the fraternities on this at Purdue to get to do a you know, a song on stage, and we did a performance of Peaches with me on lead vocals and fake guitar, and it was the, do you remember the video where they had all the ninjas fighting and shit?
I do.
Okay, so we reenacted that. We had a couple guys that were the ninjas, and we had two really fat guys that were sumo wrestlers that we had wear diapers and run into each other. It was choreographed, and you know what? We fucking won the entire thing.
I'm so proud of you. Something you never heard your dad say.
There were 50 when we got to the finals, and I'll tell you this much. I have it on videotape somewhere. It's one of the only things I haven't purged. I have to. I'll see if I can get up on the Cobra page. It is an award winning performance for sure.
Well, cool. That record's kind of a fun listen once in a while. I really like that song. I don't know, Kitty. Is it just called Kitty? Meow 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 meow.
It's Kitty. It's Lump. A couple other ones.
Yeah, and Lump. Chrysler used to play once in a while.
Wow.
I fucking. Well, we remember we would do like cover shows, and we'd that was up there with Crazy Bitch with things that like I do not want to do this, but people it fucking got a reaction most times that was a positive, and that would help you power through. But let's get back to the top. We hit the 20 to 11 on the movies in the last episode. Let's go 10 through 1. You have the top 10 in front of you?
I do. Here we go. Number 10, Time to Kill.
Hey, there's John Grisham, my boy. Read this book.
Yeah, this had Sandra Bullock. She was definitely in my top 10 at the time.
Oh, really?
For a little bit. Yeah.
She's never really done it for me. She's an okay actress, though.
Yeah. So. I'm really into chicks that drive buses.
Okay, nice.
Birdcage. God, I don't understand. This whole thing, like, this movie annoys me.
Me too. I honestly don't get the people who love Nathan Lane, because he only does one fucking annoying thing in everything he does. And I just mad props for Robin Williams just as a comic and an actor, but not this one. I'd probably be more likely to watch Tu Wong Fu than this one.
I've never seen that, but I know what it is. But what about the? Who's the guy that does the voices for The Simpsons and everything? And he's wearing like short shorts the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
I can't. What's his name?
He's in everything.
Yeah, he's the guy
about.
Who does the voice of Mo, right? Napu?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe so, yes.
I can't remember.
Anyway. Either. Yeah. And The Nutty Professor.
Nah, never saw it.
Never liked it. The big fat suit era.
This is one of those movies that I see the trailer and I'm like, I don't need to see that.
Nope. The Rock.
Yeah, kind of that brain dead type of action movie that a lot of people I grew up with like.
I enjoyed this one. It was big, dumb, stupid Sean Connery. Sean Connery and, Nicolas Cage. Yes?
Yep.
Yep, The Cage. Here we go. Here is Sublime's favorite movie, 101 Dalmatians.
101 inbred dogs.
Say after this craze, that's when everybody wanted to get a Dalmatian, but people didn't realize that they're not the they don't have the best what do you call it?
This
lineage?
Movie. I mean, there was an 101 Dalmatians movie before this. I don't know. You really saying that this sparked the dog buying craze?
Well, because it was live action and all that, and people wanted to be, you know, wanted to get them to have them and sell their pelts.
Are you sure you're not confused with Spuds McKenzie?
This was a movie that came out in 96. It was the live action version, and there was a craze for Dalmatians. Go look it up. Ask Jeeves.
I miss Spuds McKenzie.
I do miss him. I actually had a T-shirt when I was in eighth grade.
Of course, you
with
did.
A beer advertisement. I wore Spuds McKenzie to school, and they didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
Imagine now. What about Joe Camel? People wore those fucking shirts back then.
Yeah, I wore those in high school.
The greatest part about it is you're wearing stuff you get for free for drinking or smoking to get that, to earn that, right?
Yeah, well, there is different ways. I mean, I got a couple of them just by buying a pack of cigarettes.
Okay.
But yeah, you could get the Camel cash and send it in. Yeah.
Ransom.
Give me back my son!
Huh?
Give me back my son!
Known Jew hater, Mel Gibson.
I'm amazed that movie is in the top 10. But for some reason, I didn't think it was that big of a movie. Jerry Maguire. We don't need to do the quotes. Mission at but you get two in a row. Jesus. This is the beginning of, well, it's continuing of domination. God damn, Tom Cruise, like over 30 years of domination of the box office. Number three, Mission Impossible. He's got number three and number four for that year.
No doubt.
Then, oh, Twister.
Actually, two and one I saw together. My girlfriend that I mentioned, she rented these two, and we had like a date night inside. But Twister is such a fucking stupid movie. My God.
Oh, God, it's terrible.
And it follows the same fucking cookie-cutter script of every so many damn movies. And it's just, I don't know, some actually pretty good actors in it, though. You got Cary Elwes. I always kind of like Jamie Gertz. Helen Hunt nearly didn't do much for me, but she's a good actress. Bill Paxton. And who's that? He's dead now, the blonde guy, who's kind of like the comedic relief on the...
That's Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman. I really have always liked him, but just the idea that like you guys are chasing corporate, you're corporate tornado chasers. We do it for the science and the love. It's like give me a fucking break, man. Science needs money.
I never liked it, and I also didn't like the number one. I never liked Independence Day either.
Everything I just said about Twister applies to this fucking movie too.
Yes. Oh, my God. I can't
believe it. And suddenly Bill Pullman talk like this.
Yeah. It's great because he does great presidential speeches. Those are the dumbest movies. If you put Twister and Independence Day with levels of stupidity and bad writing against any other, I guarantee they clobber any other top two movies for the last 24 years.
Oh, maybe. Good budgets, and they brought in some credible actors, but yeah, I just script is so fucking insulting and dumb in both of them, and just the one-liners. But here's my theory with kind of like Nirvana and grunge kind of changing the pop culture and the way we looked at the world. 5 years later, we were a little fatigued. I don't want it to be serious anymore. I want girls to look hot again. You know, it's just that Poison reunites, Kiss goes back on tour, and these two movies are in one and two.
Okay, that's a good theory. But of course, you got the great track "Humans Being" by Sammy and the Van Halen brothers.
Yeah, that song sucks. Well, Van Halen had a song on that soundtrack, but I have a different Van Halen tune. They sort of semi reunited with David Lee Roth, and then that all imploded this whole year. And they did the Greatest Hits package with two new songs. Which of course is why Sammy left the band or was fired, all that garbage that we've got into. But the song with Dave back on vocals, I thought it was pretty good. And Me Wise Magic.
days from now, it all goes clear. A Buddhist riff.
See, when we were talking about the reunions, and I just kind of glossed over it there, but this was kind of big news that very akin to the way Kiss did, and much to the chagrin of Mitch Malloy, Van Halen just kind of walked out on stage at an awards show with David, yeah. And that was the way they announced to the world. You know, they kind of followed the Kiss lead there. But yeah, we all know the story that it was very short-lived. Things kind of went haywire from there very quick, and they ended up just dumping out this Greatest Hits album with two new songs that featured Dave on vocals.
Yeah, it was super confusing to me because that was, I remember hearing that Greatest Hits and, you know, the fact that they actually got in the studio and did those tracks and then it all fell apart. It was just yeah. Very bizarre, right?
Oh, while Mitch Malloy was in the next room.
Yo, weren't you that guy in Van Halen?
That's right.
He's like warming up his voice. He's like, just stay in here for, we'll let you know.
I don't want to be known as the crazy guy who goes around saying he's in Van Halen.
He's in there just whitening his teeth. I'm ready for my close-up, guys.
Crest strips on his teeth, waiting to get the call. With that, it's your pick, Lewis. What do you got for next for 1986, the greatest year in rock?
Yeah, as far as comebacks, too, you know, this year was the comeback of Weird Al Yankovic.
I knew you were going here, man.
I mean, he'd had a little bit of a lull, mostly because I think Michael Jackson didn't release anything for a couple of years. But he was back, and he was ready to tell everybody about the trials and tribulations of being Amish.
As I walk through the valley where I harvest my grain, I take a look at my wife and realize she's very plain. But that's just perfect for an Amish like me. You know I shun fancy things like electricity. At 4:30 in the morning, I'm milking cows. Jebediah feeds the chickens and Jacob plows. Fool, and I've been milking and plowing so long that even Ezekiel thinks that my mind is gone. I'm a man of the land, I'm into discipline. Got a Bible in my hand and a beard on my chin. But if I finish all of my chores and you finish thine, then tonight we're gonna party like it's 1699. We've been spending most our lives living. Me in the butt last week. I just smiled at him and I turned the other cheek. I really don't care, in fact I wish him well, cause I'll be laughing my head off when he's burning in hell. But I ain't never punched a tourist even if he deserved it. An Amish with a tool, you know that's unheard of. I never wear buttons but I got a cool hat, and my homies agree I really look good in black. Fool, if you come to visit you'll be bored to tears. We haven't even paid the phone bill in 300 years, but we ain't really quaint, so please don't point and stare. We're just technologically impaired. There's no phone, no lights, no motor car, not a single luxury. Like Robinson Crusoe, it's as primitive as can be. We've been spending most of our lives living in an Amish paradise. We're just plain and simple guys living in an Amish paradise. There's no time for sin and vice living in an Amish.
I love the fact that Coolio is still butthurt over that. It's like the only guy who's like, dude, you do realize you're fucking Coolio, right? I mean, look at yourself in the mirror. Stop taking yourself so fucking seriously, man.
Maybe he didn't like the fact that the name of the album was called Bad Hair Day.
Have you ever seen that YouTube show Hot Ones?
No. What is
okay.
that?
Okay. It's a show where this guy interviews people and while they eat hot wings with ever escalating heat. Okay. And there's one with Coolio. I recommend everybody watch it. It's kind of a fun show for the most part, but check out Hot Ones with Coolio and get to the part where he actually takes his hat off. You will fucking shit yourself when you see his head.
All right. I can't wait. He gets too hot. Anyway. He's got to take his hat off.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can fast forward to that part. It's towards the end when he gets the really hot stuff. But
nice.
And we should probably mention the name of the song. That was Amish Paradise, of course.
All right. I'm going to quiz you here on some sports. You ready?
Yep.
World Series champion.
96 was Yankees.
Boom. Super Bowl 30.
96 would have been... Packers? No. Yeah, the Packers.
Cowboys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, the Packers 96 team won. It would have been 96. Sorry. Yep, this was the... Okay, anyway, what else you got?
This one you can just pretty much guess. NBA champion.
96. That would have been the Bulls again.
You got it. Yep. Stanley Cup? Am I going too far?
This one's going to be a little tougher. Let me see, 96. Maybe the New York Rangers?
Avalanche?
Okay. Oh, the first year in Colorado. Yeah, they stole the team from Quebec.
Yeah. And one last one. Of course, I know that you're a big fan of horse racing. Winner of the Kentucky Derby. What was the name of the horse?
Cigar.
It's Grindstone.
Oh, that was close.
Okay. What's the next artist? Next band?
For my last pick of the greatest year in rock, 1996. As a fan of the King of the Hill, I'm a huge fan of the Refreshments.
Okay, man,
I tell you what, they probably didn't have much of a career after that because that show stayed on TV for 13 years. And if they set up the right contract and arrangement, they were continuing to get a payday for quite some time. Only Les Claypool can relate. But the Refreshments had an album. What is it called? Fizzy Fuzzy Big and Buzzy or something like that. And I've always had a fondness for the basically their only hit, and that's Bandidos.
So just how far down do you want to go? Well, we could talk it out over a cup of Joe, and you could look deep into my eyes like I was a supermodel. Uh-huh. It's you and me, baby, no one else we could trust. We'll say nothing to no one, no how. Or we bust and never crack a smile, or flinch or cry for nobody. Uh-huh. We'll give your ID card to the border guard. Yeah, your alien says you got Jean-Luc Picard of the United Federation of Planets. You see, one speak English anyway. Everybody knows. The pistol, so I'll keep the pesos. Yeah, and that seems fair.
That's a great song, by the way. And I had actually never heard it until you featured it on some random episode a while back.
Really? That was the first time?
Yeah, I don't know why, because apparently it was a huge song. Yes,
yeah, I mean, big enough.
Yeah, no, but I dig it. Big cool. time. Good pick.
Well, we're getting towards the end here, Luce. Any other fun facts from 96 before we get into your last pick?
Pantera put out an album called The Great Southern Trendkill.
Yeah, I like the record.
I'm going to reveal something that's going to shock the world.
Uh-oh.
That is Pantera, overrated.
Oh. Do you really think you having a shit opinion is shocking? Hey, Luce Cannon has something stupid to say. What?
I just played Weirdo Yankovic and the President of the United States of America.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Oh, man, I don't know, man. I am not the world's biggest Pantera fan, as you know, but I have a lot of respect for musically what they did.
Don't like the guitar tone.
It took me a while, too, man. It was really... It is what it is, though. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like... Norwegian black metal I'll never like, because it what they're going for is actually what you hear. It's not that they can't tighten it up and make it sound better. It's actually part of it. It's supposed to sound hard and cold and shitty. So I think Pantera almost kind of developed this sound that really was meant just for Pantera. And yeah, it took me a while to get over that. I've never been a huge fan of the tone. But once I got into it a little bit, I was more of like, okay, I get it. But it is very rough and abrasive, very, very metallic.
Yeah, it's essentially their guitar tone is akin to Billy Corgan's voice to me.
Okay.
That's,
yeah, if you can't get past that, you're never going to like anything about them. But to say they're overrated is, I don't know. It's like, I personally have an issue with the way it sounds, therefore they're not good. Yeah.
Not for me.
We're not talking about Beyonce asshole.
Okay, listen to me. Tool put out an album, Anemia, with the track Hooker with a Penis. Your thoughts on Tool?
I love Tool.
At this time, at least?
Yeah, no, I got into Tool with the Undertow record, so.
Yeah. I got that, and they were kind of like Pantera to me. I never could get back into them. But
you know, I'll say this. As much as I like them, I buy everything they release. They're not a must-see band for me. I mean, the three times I've seen them have been at Fest. I've never bought a ticket because I wanted to go see them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I saw them at Lollapalooza on the side stage before even Undertow came out, and they're phenomenal. And then I saw them, I don't know, 20 years later or something like that, and all I remember is a light show, and then Maynard hid behind an amp the entire time and never came out.
Here's the thing with Tool. If they just don't really fit a certain thing for a lot of people, and they can't get past that. And that's fine. That just means it's not for you. You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff out there that isn't for me. But I've never had a problem with the way they presented their stuff. I don't care that they take these long breaks or do these weird things. I actually think they are fucking with their fans, as you know. I think they do that quite a bit. But that's part of the whole thing. I think a lot of their fans understand that, and they're still fans. It's okay for them to... It seems like I hear a lot of criticism, like, what's the fucking point if you're going to hide back there? I kind of get what you're saying, but that's what they're doing. Who cares? Don't go. I mean, I don't really put on a Tool record with the idea, like, I don't playlist Tool. That's a better way to put it. I will listen to a record, and I'll listen to it from beginning to end. To be honest with you, I'm not their biggest fan. It kind of all blends together.
Well, they're definitely an album. I mean, if you have a Tool song come up in a mix, that's a jarring thing.
Yeah, I mean, it'd have to be off their EP or the song Sober. That's about it.
Also this year, Pearl Jam completely lost the thread for me, and I was out of them for at least a decade with the album No Code.
Is this the first record since Vitalogy?
This is the one right after Vitalogy. I'm looking at the track list here, and there's a song, Off He Goes, which is like a ballad that I remember. I own this. I couldn't get through this album. I was done. I didn't even buy Yield, the next one, which is actually pretty good. Your thoughts?
Vitalogy made it clear to me that they were going in a direction that wasn't really my cup of tea, so I checked out. I didn't buy anything after that until their most recent record, Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, that's what it was for me. I mean, Vitalogy, I hated that. I didn't like that either. And I also hated the fact that they had two songs with the name Man on it. Better Man and Nothing Man. Ridiculous!
And they both suck.
Yeah, they played them all the time.
Better Man!
Also this year, King's X with Ear Candy.
Perfectly rated.
Rush with Stir of Echoes or Echoes or some shit.
I'm going to fall into the trap of with Neil Peart's passing, I'm going to make an effort to dig deeper into Rush.
That's cool. I did, and it's still not for me.
Okay.
But I respect them. That's all I got as far as like just like side albums. Do you have anything else that maybe we haven't mentioned or that you kind of were going through and were maybe surprised came
not
out this
in my
year?
Notes. We covered everything that I had, so. Okay. I mean, Celine Dion.
Sure. And Mariah Carey.
Bone Thugs released Crossroads this year. Oh, Toni Braxton, a little bit of a spank material back then. She had that You're Making Me High tune.
Spice Girls had Wannabe, number one single. So you're ready to get out of here, Baco?
I am, man. 1996 was the greatest year in rock, clearly.
It was. So we're going to play out with Bad Religion.
One of your favorites, kind of an oddball band that you like a lot that at least doesn't fit in your little cubbyhole.
My little zone, that's right.
Right, it's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. And that is with the album The Gray Race, and we're going to play out with Streets of America. So.
Very cool.
Rock's not dead.
It just got greenlit to be in Tom Cruise's next movie. Radiating
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.